Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody and welcome. This is episode number 109 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the best podcast about Linux and ham radio on the internet today. And there's no question about that, so I don't want to hear any complaining. My name is Russ, K5TUX, and over there on the other side of the border, it's not a pond or anything like that, although there is some water in the way, is Pete, V2XPW. Hello, Pete.
P2XPL. You're close. You're thinking of Harrison there. Harrison's gotten under your skin, I think. But good day. Hi to everyone in the chat room and all our live listeners. Glad to be here tonight.
Did I say V2XPW? I did, didn't I?
You did.
Okay, V2XPL. We've got that all straightened out. It's not like people who listen to the show haven't figured that out already, but there
we go. I've been called worse.
I can call you worse right now if you like.
Go ahead. We need the badger.
Maybe later. I got some feedback, as it were, on the IRC channel a couple of weeks ago from a person who is in there right now as we speak, actually, and who may be called upon in mere moments to actually do some of this part of the show because I didn't get enough information. X-Ride, who's in the chat room right now and probably is going, oh, look, they mentioned me, haha, suggested that we talk about a few topics that we haven't mentioned before or have mentioned very little in the past. And the first of those is antenna modeling, and the second of those is PCB design or electronic circuit board design. The reason I think we haven't mentioned these topics in the past is because I don't think that a large part of our audience is really into PCB design, although I know some of them are because they came up to me and visited with me at the Dayton Hamvention. They talked about some of the projects they were working on, and some of them involved embedded systems, things like the Raspberry Pi. Now, you don't need PCB design tools to use a Raspberry Pi because it's sort of already been designed, but there are still people out there who are building things. And they were wondering if there are any tools out there for, you know, designing PCBs. So I do have a couple of tools we can talk about. And X-Ride has told us that his call sign is AK4WQ, Alpha Kilo 4 Whiskey, Quebec. And speaking of Quebec, that's where you are.
Correct.
Excellent. Indeed. That's two Quebecs in one. Your brother's from another mother or something.
There you go.
Yes, I live in Quebec, and he has a Q in his call sign. Therefore, we are tight as anything.
Long-lost brothers.
Exactly.
Man. Peace out.
AK4WQ, if you want to fill in any gaps while we're talking, feel free to do so, because there are going to be some very large ones. So we could talk a little bit about GEDA, or talk about EDA specifically. If you're into doing a board design or schematic design, these tools might help you out. The website that I'm going off of here is www.geda-project.org. People have asked me over time, like, if I wanted to build something, like, you know, with an Arduino or something like that, where I actually have to design the PCB or the circuitry that's involved because I want to create some sort of embedded system that uses Linux. Well, how would I do that? Because there are tools out there for Windows for doing this kind of thing, but I'm not sure of where to find one for Linux. And it turns out that that's what the GEDA project is all about. So I'll go ahead and read what it says here on their first paragraph. It says the GEDA project has produced and continues to work on a full GPL suite and toolkit of electronic design automation tools. These tools are used for electrical circuit design, schematic capture, simulation, prototyping, and production. Currently, the GEDA project offers a mature suite of free software applications for electronics design, including schematic capture, attribute management, bill of materials generation. Well, it goes on anyway. So apparently, if you have an electrical engineering background, you can use these tools to actually look at a printed circuit board and lay down, you know, traces, put components on, and actually develop electronic circuits. And
that takes time. It's very, you have to figure out, it's easier on paper when you have your schematic diagram. Having done this, you have your schematic diagram, and then you try to transfer that to a PC board. And that takes a lot of thinking, a lot of planning, and it's not as easy as it seems. So that's an important step when you're designing your board.
Okay, that's pretty interesting, because I obviously haven't tried to do any of that myself. But seeing as that you have, these tools might have been useful to you once upon a time.
Unfortunately, I didn't check these notes until very late in the week, so I didn't have time to go on and play with them, or else I would have. But I'm going to do that. Maybe we could do a follow-up on a future episode.
Yeah, that would probably be good. We can sort of put these tools out there for anybody who's interested in them, and maybe we can talk about them with a little more intelligence on another episode. But there's a couple of tools that are particularly interesting to me. One is the PCB tool, which is part of GEDA, which is the printed circuit board editor. It actually gives you the ability to look at a picture of a printed circuit board and then edit it to your tastes. Like if you wanted to put on an integrated circuit or change a transistor or something like that, it actually allows you to model that, change out traces, and do all of those things. I'm not sure how far it gets along. I mean, I'm not sure how the diagrams that you eventually produce would get to an actual printed circuit board, but I assume it gets you most of the way there.
Normally, I don't know, it could have come a long way, but between the schematic diagram and the printed circuit board, I don't think there's any converters. Usually you have to do that work, because you have to figure out where to put the trace between the diode and the resistor and the transistor, which on paper won't be at the same place as physically on your printed circuit board. You could design it that way, but usually it's not that way. So yeah, it can be a little bit tricky. So I'm actually going to check these out. You're kind of re-sparking my interest in that. I haven't played with this stuff since the mid-90s, I'll tell you guys. So I'm sure it's come a long, long way.
Okay, cool. The other thing I just wanted to bring up as part of this suite of tools is something called G-Scheme, G-S-C-H-E-M, which is basically like the PCB editor, but it's for schematic diagrams. It actually gives you the thing where a capacitor looks like a circle and a transistor has like a three-pole, you know, thing with a line. And, you know, for anybody who's actually looked at a schematic diagram and knows like what a diode looks like and what a capacitor looks like and a resistor and so on, and a ground and a trace and all that, GSCHEM actually allows you to create schematics for a device you might want to create. Or if you can download a file in compatible format, you can actually look at the schematic that was created by somebody else. So that seems like a useful tool, even to somebody who's not building something, but just wants to know how something is laid out internally.
And I would recommend people check it out too. Just looking at a schematic diagram, a schematic diagram, just looking at it. It's like X-Ray had said in the chat room before, you know, you can't get there before you start. So don't be afraid to look at the diagram and try to figure things out. And yeah, it might be, illegible at first, but it's still an interesting exercise.
And like I said, we mentioned this early on in the discussion, but if you want to find out more about this particular project, you can go to geda-project.org, and that will give you all you want to know about the different tools that are available in this project. And of course, like I said, they are app-get installable on Debian-based systems, which would include Mint and Ubuntu and so on and so forth. If you want to try them out or are fascinated by this, check out the website or do an install and see where it leads you, I guess.
be interesting to see if you can get diagrams for the various radios that people have, you know, to get transferred into this software and be able to read the schematic from your favorite piece of equipment in the shack.
Yeah, perhaps so. I don't know if there's a schematic out there in GEDA format for my like TS-570, but if there was, I'd be interested in looking at it. Of course, I'd probably get lost in it like a Wikipedia sort of way where I'd be going 17 layers deep and wouldn't come up for a week.
That's the fun of it, though.
Well, perhaps so.
I didn't know you had a 570. That's interesting. I like the Kenwood radios. I have a 440 myself, and our club has the 850, and I love them both. They're built like tanks.
Yeah, I love my 570. I don't know that I'd give it up for any other radio because I've seen lots of radios and they all have, you know, flashy displays and lots of knobs and stuff like that. But for something that just does basic operation, everything you could ever want on HF frequencies and is really easy to use and navigate, I don't know that there's a better radio than the 570.
Yeah, very well. There's the 440.
Well, there is the 440, but I think the 440 is a little older, isn't it? Or am I...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was just bugging you. I have a TS-50 as well that's, I'm guessing, mid-80s, which is one of the smaller ones that was originally built for mobile use. I use it in my RV and also little tank. I mean, you could practically throw this thing against the wall and you can't destroy it. All the buttons are in front. There's actually, the TS-50 has a few sub-menus, but they're easy to navigate. I like radios where everything's on the front, where you don't have to go through, you know, 17 layers of menus. I'd rather go through 17 layers of PC board than 17 layers of menus to get through something.
I'm actually pretty familiar with the TS-50. My first radio was actually a TS-130. It was sort of one of the radios that fed off the 520 Kenwood Legacy, which was... That was a radio that was tube radio, so of course you had to, you know, set the plate adjustment and, you know, get the finals all worked up and everything, whereas the 130 was actually a solid-state radio, so you didn't have to do that, but it still had the kind of look and feel of it, so it was pretty neat.
Yeah, I had an old tube radio for a while. I had a Yaesu FT-101 that had the tube finals. It was a hybrid, and I loved it, except when I wanted to talk to somebody really quick, and then it kind of annoyed me. But I actually missed that radio. I sold it, and I probably shouldn't have, but yeah, that's okay. Anyhow, that being said, I'm going to stop. We could talk about radio reviews all night, and we don't want to do that.
No, we probably shouldn't do that. Now, I'm going to guess that my next topic, which is Manjaro Linux, is something that you have not experienced to date.
No, but I was reading your notes and I'm excited. I'm, like I was saying in the chat room and have mentioned in the past, I'm searching for the perfect Linux distribution for myself and my shack. And this seems very exciting. So I can run through all the other ones that I've tried in a little bit. But right now I want to hear what you have to say about this, and I'll probably give it a try.
Okay, well, Manjaro came to my attention because a lot of the folks that I chat with on a daily basis are really, 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 really into Arch Linux. And to them, Arch Linux is like the next greatest thing. And I personally have never seen any reason whatsoever that I could think of to use Arch Linux. In fact, this came up when we were talking to Peter64 a few episodes back. Somebody then told me about Manjaro Linux, which is basically Arch Linux without all the crap that you have to do to get Arch Linux running. It's basically Arch Linux with an installer. And I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool. Maybe I'll try that out. So I did. And I ran this thing in a virtual machine environment under VirtualBox on my PC. And what's interesting about it is when you download the Manjaro installer and do the install, it looks and feels almost exactly like Linux Mint. Now, that's probably not coincidence because I downloaded the Cinnamon version. And Cinnamon, of course, is a project that came out of the Linux Mint area. So that's the desktop environment that I picked. But that's not the one that you need to pick because it actually comes in an XFCE version. An OpenBox version, a Cinnamon version, like I just said, a KDE version. And of course, if you don't like any of those, you can put any kind of desktop environment on it that you like. But those are already prepackaged and you can run it right out of the box with any of those. Just download it as it is, 32-bit, 64-bit, do the install, and you'll have that desktop environment available to you. Now, of course, it runs by default as a live CD. I believe it's actually a live DVD because I want to say it's about 1.3 gigs on the download. Once you download it and fire up the installer, it, you know, basically if you don't do anything, if you just fire it up from an install disk and let it run, it will boot up into the environment that you selected as your download. It gives you a desktop, and it basically says, run me as I am, or if you prefer, you can go ahead and install me. And the installer is super simple. It's just like Ubuntu, just like Linux Mint, real easy. It completely hides the fact that you're using Arch Linux. The only thing that really gives away the fact that you're using Arch Linux is when you do the install and you finally have everything on your system, when the thing pops up to say you have updates, you're using the Pac-Man file manager as, or not file manager, the Pac-Man package manager, as opposed to Yum or Apt or Synaptic or, you know, whatever else. That's really the only giveaway. Depending on who you ask, they say that Pac-Man is better than all of those other things. Maybe that's to your liking, maybe it isn't. The thing about Manjaro is it takes away all of the problems that somebody like a noob might have with getting Arch installed. It's just as easy as installing Mint. So even a noob could do the install. There were a couple of things I thought were kind of interesting during my experience with Manjaro. The first is the aesthetic of it. The boot screens, the desktop environment screens, the background wallpapers, and all of that stuff are amazing. They're very clean, very modern. They blow away most other distributions that I've seen. You know, even the default desktop environment just looks super cool. The boot up screen has kind of taken a page out of macOS's book, where it kind of does everything in a bunch of different languages and has a very sort of glossy look to it and everything. That works as far as that's concerned, but when it comes to the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Windows 8 roll-up screensaver. Have you seen that thing?
Yep.
Okay, well, that to me is annoying as hell.
Yep.
And for some reason, Manjaro has adopted that. So when your screen goes into lock mode, in order to unlock it, you have to roll up the window shade, which has like the time and date on it, in order to get to your unlock thing. And to me, that's really annoying as hell.
Could you not turn that off?
You probably could, but I don't know that I got that far into it or even tried to get that far into it. I just wanted to have a machine to see what it looked like.
And I mean, but when I say turn it off, I don't mean go into the code and rebuild the thing. I mean, just is there a checkbox somewhere?
Is there a toggle? I don't know if there's a toggle for that, but I sure hope there is because it's really annoying. But that's one of those niggling points, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, if that's the only problem that I had with Manjaro, I'd be okay with it, I think.
Ah, cool. No, it sounds very easy indeed.
So a couple other things I wanted to note, which really don't have anything to do with anything, because honestly, the distribution as a whole is just super usable, real easy to install. And I would even give it to a noob to install because I bet they could.
Well, you're going to find out because I'm going to try. And I still consider myself, although a four-year noob, still very much a noob.
Okay, well, I guess if you can install it, then I'm going to hear about it. But I'm willing to bet that you can.
That I can't?
No, that you can. I'm willing to bet that you can. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. No, I'm saying, well, you're more experienced than a lot of people, and I would say a dirt noob who just came into it. If you handed them a DVD and a computer, they could probably install it.
Okay. Well, so, I play with Linux, but I don't play with it a lot because I don't have a lot of time. So. Although I've been at it for 4 years, you know, some people would have learned what I learned, like, you know, in the first 3 months kind of thing. And okay. That's okay.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
I'm at peace with that.
I'm patting you on the head.
Thank you.
So a couple of things I just wanted to bring up is like totally like aside type points, but they were kind of interesting to me. This is the first distribution that I can recall, and maybe I'm just misremembering, but the little screen where it shows you a map of the world where you want to pick your time zone, I'm pretty sure this was the very first one that I ever seen, which was actually a topographical map. It actually showed you the colors and like where the deserts were and stuff like that, which is a totally useless feature when it comes to setting the time zone on your computer. But for some reason, it just seemed really cool to me. So there's that. And then the only other thing that bothered me about the distribution really doesn't have anything to do with the distribution itself at all, but it's the fact that I had to download it from SourceForge, which took for freaking ever, and it didn't seem to matter which mirror I chose. It just took a long, long time. So I'm hoping that somewhere along the line, Manjaro decides to create a torrent of their different versions and seed them somewhere. I'll be happy to seed them myself if they actually get a torrent thing up and running. But I would love to see Manjaro distributed by torrent, because it would be nice to be able to download it way faster than you can get it from SourceForge. But again, that's not really about the distro. Mint distributes their distro by torrent, and I love being able to get it that way.
SourceForge isn't usually that bad, though. Maybe you just had a bad ISP day or something, no?
Maybe, but I really don't think so. I mean, even at home, my download speeds usually run around 30 or 35 megabits per second. My download was going to take an hour and a half.
And I'm guessing it's not like because of the size of the file.
No, 1.3 gigabytes. See, what happened was I downloaded it at work. I let it run for about 2 hours, so it completely downloaded at work. And then I was able to download it to my home PC, which is on the same network, using my DSL connection in about 8 minutes. So that's what I would expect from a download for a larger pipe out on the internet, not an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you mention that, because when I download stuff from work, it takes about an hour and a half for a couple of gigs as well. But us, it's just because of the internal, all of the internal settings and I guess the billions of pipes it has to go through before it finally gets to my little office in the basement of the hospital. But it's just, you know, it's a fraction of the time here at home compared to where it is there. But my, you know, we're supposed to be fiber optic fed. You know, we have the latest and the greatest machines. But yet here with my little crappy PC, I can download way faster.
I know my bottleneck was not me. I would expect that any pipe that's feeding me, regardless of how many it actually has to go through, would be way larger than my DSL connection. So the fact that I was getting pretty poor performance meant that there was a bottleneck somewhere else. And like I said, torrents seem to alleviate those bottlenecks, because you get multiple data streams and all of that. So I do hope they'll distribute via torrent at some point.
Well, there you go. We'll just tell everyone to go down and make the suggestion, and you never know. Maybe they just haven't thought of it yet.
Well, maybe not. I tell you what, we're going to move the two little things that you've got here to the main segment, and go ahead and do some music, because I think we've been talking too long already.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
All right. Well, we got some music then, and just for the record, because we have a policy of full disclosure, which I've just revealed, because we really have no such policy. I took all the music again for this episode, so these are all my selections. Pete will get his chance someday.
And I'm okay with that.
Okay. I'm glad you're okay with that, because I might have to kick you off if you weren't. Anyway, I heard this song the other day. I can't remember where. I think it was over on Linux Outlaws or maybe Rat Hole Radio or something like that. But Heffervescent, which is a group that we have played on this show a few times in the past, has come out with a new album this year, and they have this great song on there called Let This Monkey Go. I have no idea what the song is about, but it is a great tune. A little unusual for the stuff we usually play around here, but I think everyone should really enjoy it. We'll hit this and we'll talk some more on the other side. well. What'd you think of that one?
Actually, I'd listened to it before the show, just because I was curious about the title. I like the melody. I'm not really that crazy about the chorus, but overall, it's a pretty cool tune. It's pretty funky.
Yeah, it's got a funky sort of techno feel, sort of atmospheric feel to it. I don't know. It's just different than a lot of the music I've heard coming out of anywhere lately, so I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very good. Good choice.
Well, thank you very much, since I stole your choice to play that choice, so I'm glad it was at least moderately good.
Yeah, there you go. From the album Little Egg, courtesy of Jamendo.
Yes, sir. All right, well, the next few topics are yours, so I'm going to sit back and let you talk and maybe fill in a few blanks. So let's talk about this internet balloon thing. As a matter of fact, I heard about this yesterday on the Mintcast. They were talking about it, and they had their doubts about whether this was going to turn into another Prism or a Big Brother or Eye in the Sky type of thing about providing internet via high-altitude balloon. But Google wants to do it, so what's your take?
Yeah, more power to them. I actually had no idea that the Mintcast mentioned that, and I promise I did not steal that from them. No, I actually found this via Associated Press's feed. Let's see, June 14th, so a couple of days ago, Nick Perry and Martha Mendoza reporting for AP. Basically, Google claims that 2 out of 3 people globally have no internet. I saw this. I thought this was like the coolest thing I'd seen. I mean, everybody loves to hate Google. Well, some people love to love them. Some people love to hate them. I'm kind of indifferent. I'm not indifferent. I'm a little partial to Google because they're Canadian. So I guess just because of that, I have to like them a little bit. But anyhow, they claim that 2 out of 3 people globally have no internet. I mean, of course, you know, somewhere it's more, some places it's less. But their goal is to get the entire planet online. So this week, from a frozen field in the heart of New Zealand's South Island at Lake Tikapo. I'm thinking of Lake Titicaca from Beavis and Butthead. Anyhow, that's us tonight. From New Zealand south, sorry, I've lost my place. Anyhow, from a lake in southern New Zealand, they launched 30 of these balloons. This was a culmination of 18 months work from Google, and it's called Project Loon. They called it Project Loon because of how wacky the ideas sounded. Very secretive project until just a few days ago. Apparently nobody knew about this, but basically people who gave you the driverless car and the web surfing eyeglasses are now giving you a flimsy helium-filled inflatable balloon that's going to beam the internet down to Earth as it sails past on the wind. So basically, they're still in their experimental stage. The balloon was the first of thousands that Google's leaders eventually hope to launch. These things fly about 12 kilometers or 20 miles up in the air in a layer called the stratosphere. And they want to do this in order to bridge the gapping digital divide, they say, between the world's 4.8 billion unwired people compared to the, 2.2 billion who are plugged in. So basically, they say that this might leapfrog, expensive laying of fiber cable and things like that, and give ease of access to the internet to places, desert areas, places in Africa, Southeast Asia, etc. So the first person to get this Google balloon internet access was a farmer named Charles Nemo in a place called Leeston, New Zealand. What Google basically did is they handpicked a number of people to be their test people, and they didn't even tell them what they were testing when they chose them. So these people kind of took a leap of faith. And basically Google, what they did is they put this antenna on the side of this person's house, the people who were the test people, and the antenna looks a little bit like a big basketball sitting there on the side of the house. Not that big. It was maybe, 18 inches in diameter. It's bright orange, of course, so it's kind of an eyesore. If you live in any place that has restrictions, you might not be able to use this, but that's okay. So these balloons will fly free in the air, of course, on the prevailing winds. What they claim is that the beauty of this stratosphere is it's got very predictable layers of wind that go this way and that, and that by controlling the altitude of the balloon, they can actually steer them relatively easily. Each balloon would provide internet access for the area twice the size of New York City. So about 1,250 square kilometers for us Canadians, or 780 square miles roughly. And they claim that terrain is not a challenge, be it flat or mountainous. You don't have to worry because the balloon is sitting above you. They want to put a network of balloons. So basically the balloons will backbone off of each other. And that way, because as a balloon flies by, so this gentleman, farmer who had the test, claims that he got the internet for about 15 minutes while the balloon sails past. Of course, they don't have a network up there yet, but the theory is that they'll have a network of balloons that they'll be controlling so that as one flies past and you get the signal, it's over you, you'll lose the signal, but by the time you're losing the signal, you're getting the signal from the next one, which is coming behind it so many miles away.
Did you say this test candidate's name was Charles Nemo?
I don't know if you pronounce it Nemo, N-I-M-M-O. Charles Nemo, small town of Leeston, New Zealand. He's a farmer and small businessman, and he used it to check the weather to, and this is a true story, or they claim, he checked it to check the weather to see if the weather would be good enough to shear his sheep that day.
I see. No, you pronounced it in such a way that I was thinking N-E-M-O in my head. And if you had said that, that was the way it was spelled, I was figuring that Google was setting itself up for the largest April Fool's Day prank ever pulled, because we all know what Nemo means, and it just sounded like a ruse. But okay, if that's in fact the gentleman's name, then maybe there's more to this than just a practical joke.
Well, you know, we're way past April, and I did get this from the Associated Press feed in there.
No, the next one.
Oh, the... so basically, yeah, these things are filled with helium. They're made of plastic, which is similar to grocery bags that, you know, everybody sees. They base the technology on what NASA does and the JPL, of course, and some stuff from the Defense Department. They claim that they won't interfere with airplanes because they fly much higher. Airplanes, you know, fly about 20 or 10 kilometers up. These things are supposed to be at 20 kilometers, so twice the height. And as they were launching them and as they were coming back down during their test, they were actually speaking to air traffic control to make sure that the plane stayed well clear of them. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. I think this is actually fascinating. These things have huge solar panels under them. So basically they look like hot air balloons with some electronics, and then this big solar panel that's about maybe 3 feet by 3 feet. And the solar panel in 4 hours of sunlight will get enough energy to power it for the entire day. So I just thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Go to google.com, google.com/loon, L-O-O-N, and they actually talk about it. And they have some videos, which is where I saw what these things were shaped like. It's two or three videos, and one of them is a four-minute video that shows you the launch of these things and how they're built. And I thought it was quite fascinating. One, because I'm kind of an aviation buff. Two, because I'm a ham radio guy. So, you know, it's kind of... And ham radio people have been launching balloons with repeaters and stuff on them for a number of years. So it's kind of an interesting progression. And, you know, it just took Google to figure it out. Hopefully they didn't steal the idea from some poor sap who's, you know, never going to be rich. But that being said, we'll see what happens in the future.
Okay, well, I personally have two comments about this. The first one that just came to me as I was thinking about the infrastructure of this sort of internet by balloon technology. Most people, when they experience an internet connection, they get a certain amount of performance based on how much is delegated to them by how much they pay, meaning that lots of customers will be connected to a high-speed connection, and then it's whittled down as it goes out towards the customer's premise. But in the case of these Google balloons, the data path is going to be the same on the uplink as it is on the downlink. It's not like there's going to be more bandwidth given to a balloon on the downstream side as it is on the upstream side. So how are they going to delegate this speed kind of thing? I'm not sure it's even something that they've considered. I mean, I'm just wondering what the backbone pipe is, I guess, is what my question is. What's the backbone for all these balloons?
Well, I know that they're connected somehow to a network on the ground. But aside from that, the research that I did, I didn't go that far into it, to be quite honest. And I'm not sure that the information is there. If you go on the website and you know, google.com/loon, what you'll see is kind of a more of a kind of a marketing spiel. You know, they don't go into the details of it just yet. And most likely to do that on purpose. Or maybe it's there, I just didn't see it, but it's 3 pages, the website, you know, there's 3 links, so there's not a whole lot of information there.
Right.
More fluff.
I mean, I know they're going to get some sort of, I just wonder how much bandwidth they're going to get from these things, because obviously they're going to have to be connected to a terrestrial, backbone at some point, and they're eliminating some of the latency in some of these high altitude products, like in the satellites, because the satellites have to be, you know, hundreds of miles into the atmosphere, and so you have built-in latency because of that. And since these balloons only fly at 20 kilometers or so, you won't have those high latencies, which is a great thing. But I also wonder about the ability of them to mesh and the ability of them to transmit the data effectively back to the terrestrial network to provide decent internet service. I guess we'll see how these things pan out in the future, and obviously they're not releasing a lot of details right now, but in my head.
Yeah, they have one paragraph on it, on the How Loon Works section, and it reads, each balloon can provide connectivity to a ground area about 40 kilometers in diameter at speeds comparable to 3G. For balloon-to-balloon and balloon-to-ground communications, the balloons use antennas equipped with specialized radio frequency technology, blah, blah, blah. Project Loon currently uses ISM bands, specifically 2.4 and 5.8 gig bands, that are available for anyone to use. And it's another comment they made that they'll be using bands that are not really regulated. So that's kind of another interesting little detail there.
Well, I think some industrious ham is going to have to get his hands on this project and allow us to saddle some sort of HF gear along with these balloons so we can start doing HF by Google Balloon.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, maybe you should just, maybe there's not a whole lot of ham operators at Google, so maybe if we throw the idea at them, who knows?
Yeah, balloon bounce. That's a,
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that's an interesting project. I'm curious to see where it goes and whether it'll be the next NSA spy network of low-altitude balloons.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they'll probably have high-res cameras on there, and they'll be able to see, what you're eating and how you're picking your nose. I don't know.
Hang on. I got to go to the closet, get my tinfoil hat. I'll be right back.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I'm really curious about this next story, because I went all over their site and I was trying to figure out what you were talking about by this thing. So go ahead and enlighten me.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Linux. The Linux in their head, the tagline on the Etherpad that Russ is referring to is Linux in the Ham Shack's Badger hits the big time. And the only reason I wrote that is because I was camping this weekend, and I walked into the local store in the town where we were, a little town called Coaticook, Quebec, which is a beautiful little town in the eastern townships. It's got a gorge and falls, and anyhow, it's just very, very, very beautiful. And I was looking for a sunblock for my lips, for sunscreen, and I bought a brand of SPF 15 all-natural unscented sunscreen from the Badger Company. And you can actually go to badgerbalm.com and check out their natural products. I thought I'd mention them, one, because they're all natural. Of course, they're not free. Because they're natural, you could argue they're open source. But anyhow, I just thought it was funny. So I bought one. So I actually, in my hand, am holding a small tube of Badger Balm. So I don't know if it's going to prevent me from swearing, but it will prevent my lips from getting burnt during these summer's adventures.
It's interesting that they chose the term balm, B-A-L-M, because balm sounds like bomb, B-O-M-B. And of course, we drop many
Badger
bombs around here all the time. So.
Yeah, there you go. I can't remember where I heard this. Some comedian said, I worry, you know, should I go to the airport and say lip balm? Or I'm worried that if I say lip balm at the airport, they'll come and get me.
As well, they should.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so our main topic, as chosen by Pete, V2XPWL, for the show tonight is Field Day, which is coming up this weekend. And if you're not prepared for Field Day or have not decided on a place to go for Field Day as of yet, I suggest you get your
Badger
in gear. What would you like to say about Field Day 2013?
Well, thanks for giving me the main topic. Well, Field Day is this weekend, so I thought it was apropos. Field Day is personally my favorite ham radio event. It's kind of how I got started, so that probably has a little bit of something to do with it. My first experience in ham radio was at a local club during their Field Day. So, you know, it's a very exciting event. Basically, what is the Field Day? It's put on by the ARRL, which is the Amateur Radio Relay League, the United States National Ham Radio Organization. It's the single most popular on the air event held annually in the U.S. and Canada. It's held every year on the fourth weekend of June, and this year being, like I said, this weekend, the 22nd and 23rd. More than 35,000 radio amateurs gather, either within their clubs, groups of friends. Some people are alone in remote locations. And the objective is to work as many stations as possible on any and all amateur bands. Of course, all the traditional ones, you know, you're excluding 60, 30, 17, and 12, which don't contest. And also learning to operate in abnormal situations and in less than optimal conditions. So basically, you are quite often you're simulating emergency setup conditions like you would have in an earthquake or some other natural disaster, something like that. Field Day is open to all amateurs, of course, in the areas covered by the ARRL and RAC, which is Radio Amateurs of Canada, which is the ARRL's northern counterpart. Actually, I recently learned, this is a very, very big tangent, but I recently learned that the Radio Amateurs of Canada was used to be a branch of the ARRL. I just found that out this week, and I was not aware of that. I don't know if you were, Russ.
You know what? I was not aware of that. I had no idea that the Canadian organization had any affiliation with the ARRL at all.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. And eventually they split. I don't know what the history is. Somebody mentioned it. I'm going to check into that as well. But anyways, organizations and countries within the IARU Region 2, the International Amateur Radio Union Region 2, and of course DX stations residing in other regions may be contacted for credit, but they're not eligible to submit entries. So you could talk to somebody in France or Paraguay, but the person in France or Paraguay is not eligible for the contest. It's just Canada and the U.S. So a very exciting event. Our plans for Field Day, my plans myself, for the past few years, I've been one of the main organizers for our local club's Field Day. Our local club is Victor Echo 2 Charlie Lima Mike. We're the Montreal South Shore Amateur Radio Club, and it's always an epic event. What we do is basically we set up outside. We have a small communications trailer, very small. The trailer's it's a 16-foot trailer, I believe, a little pull-along thing. And we have one HF radio. We're operating one alpha category, which means we have one operational station at any one time. We have various radios set up, but only one of them will be on the air at a time. And mostly that's because we have trouble finding operators for the 24 hours of the contest. We're a small club, so but that's good. We have fun. We always set up an HF station, a CW station. And for the past few years, we've been doing some digital stuff. We have some guys doing RTTY and mostly PSK, which is pretty cool. And we're thinking of experimenting with Echolink a little bit this year. Also for the GOTA side, we always set up a little booth for... We have our Field Day in a very open location. It's always in a public park around Montreal that's very accessible by walking bike trails, etc. This year, we're on a park next to the water, which is really neat. It's called the Parc Léon Gravel. It's a park. It's probably about 10 minutes drive south from me, so it's very close as well. It's right by the water. It's a beautiful sight. It's got soccer fields and baseball, and people play frisbee and fly their kites. It's on the water, so there's a lot of people fishing. And the bike path goes right through there, so it's a perfect, perfect place to let the general public know what ham radio is all about. And field day is always an exciting time because you're listening to stations from all over the world. Of course, as conditions change throughout the day, the places that you're contacting are kind of different. So it's always very, very interesting that way. So we do that every year. We have a barbecue as well. So that's where the epic part comes from. We have hot dogs and hamburgers free to our members. It's free for whoever we give them to because we don't sell. We're not a commercial entity, so we're not interested in making money. But our members do pay to be part of the club. So it's one of the things that we do to thank them and encourage participation. So we'll be operating as Victor Echo 2 Charlie Lima Mike. So listen out for us. And if you do make contact, we're not the kind of club. Some of our operators are a little bit intense and like to get all the points. It's about the points, of course. But it's also about setting up and operating in less than optimal conditions. Some of our operators are diehard contesters, and you know they're all about 5-9 next, 5-9 next. I personally like to chat it up and see what other groups are doing. I've noticed in the past field days that that's a lot easier to do in the middle of the night. Things are a little bit more laid back at night. People take the time to, especially when I hear that stations are 5, 6, 7 stations working. I like to find out how many people are there and what their setup's like. And so if you do hit us up, don't be shy and ask me questions. And I won't just give you a 5-9. I'll tell you about our setup and let me know that you listen to the show. And I think that will be really, really cool. So we're there for the whole 24 hours, of course. So we always invite the local VIPs, so the mayors, the people who are responsible for public security, police, firemen, people of that nature. So to inform them as well that we're available to do community service, which we do regularly. That's what we're going to be doing, and I'm going to be very excited. I bring my RV, so my big trek 10 minutes down the road, keep the RV there so I can crash and relax for a little bit, because I spend the whole, I pretty much get there Saturday morning at 8, help with the setup, eat some food, have some drinks. We do not have alcoholic drinks because we are a club, so we don't want to condone that. Not that I have any problems with it personally, but as a club, as a legal entity, we don't have any alcohol on site. And plus, we're in a public park, and there might be families and kids. It's a family event. So when I say drinks, it's Pepsi, 7-Up, coffee, things of that nature. Lots of water, of course. And so, yeah, it's always a whole lot of fun. So hopefully I'll get to talk to some of you guys, and please don't be shy. That's my spiel for field day. I do want to encourage everybody to participate, of course, licensed and non-licensed ham. If you guys want to find your local club, you have these things called GOTA stations. GOTA is an acronym for Get On The Air. So these are stations operated by somebody like myself or Rust, who are a licensed ham. And you would come up to us and say, hey, I'm interested in this newfangled ham radio thing. How does it work? And we'll just sit you there in front of the mic, and you'll get to call CQ. And that's a little bit how I got roped in, and I got the bug. So all of the information is available at ARRL.com. That's www.ARRL.com/fieldday. Field-day. Although if you put field day in one word, it works as well, because I tried it out. And I was pleasantly surprised to find that they even have formas y reglas en español, mais aucune formule en français, malheureusement. Nothing in French, but in English and Spanish is there for you guys. So, Russ, what are you doing for field day?
I will probably wind up doing nothing for field day. The past year or two, I have tried to visit some of the local clubs up in the Springfield, Missouri area, because they do have some pretty elaborate setups for field day. One uses the county's sheriff's tactical unit van thing that they've got, and you know, that thing's pretty cool. They set up like four or five radios in there, and it's all self-contained and lots of lights, and you know, they don't have to run up generators and everything because it's all powered by you know, internal power and that kind of thing. And then there's another station they set up as an alpha station at the local Red Cross building where they operate from as well. But it seems to me that the local ham radio clubs are a pretty tight-knit community. And while you're welcome to go in there and watch, you know, the goings on and everything, they don't really have a GOTA set up, and they don't seem particularly interested in helping you operate on their equipment and everything. So, you know, if you're standing there watching what's going on, that's one thing. But if you actually want to participate, it's not quite as friendly as it definitely should be. I will take this opportunity to plug my former ham radio club, which is the Aroostook Amateur Radio Association. They're up in Aroostook County, Maine, specifically Presque Isle, which we talked about earlier. And
yeah, woohoo.
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry. But anyway, it was fun when I was getting started in ham radio, because they were the ones who fostered my interest in ham radio. They were the ones who did all the testing. They were the ones who provided the location and all the equipment for field day and everything. And I spent a lot of time when I lived up in Maine contributing to field day for the Aroostook Amateur Radio Association. And I would like to say that anybody listening to this podcast should try and contact them if they possibly can. They're operating 3 Alpha this year out of Presque Isle. Their call sign is Kilo 1 Foxtrot Sierra K1FS. You can find out all kinds of information. I actually still maintain their website, even though I don't live in the area anymore. But they have a website, k1fs.org, entirely maintained by me. And it's a great club. And considering the fact that it's a very sparsely populated area, they do their best to bring people into the amateur radio community. And I want to say that via their testing programs, they create, I want to say, on the order of 10 or more new hams every year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's they do their best. They're a nonprofit, 501c3. They take donations. You can become a member, and of course they have members from mostly from the Aroostook County area, but they have some in, you know, around here. Of course, for me, there's another guy in Missouri who is also a member. They even have members in Great Britain.
So you're still a member.
I am.
Yeah, good for you, Russ. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that some clubs. I mean, if you're still a member, that just goes to show how cool the club must be. I've written this down because I'm going to be in the area, as you know, and I'm going to make a point of contacting their repeater and saying hello, because I think that's great. And it's a shame that more clubs don't, you know, I remember a long time ago, actually, on this show specifically, maybe it was on Richard's other show, but he did a whole spiel on how a good ham radio club should conduct itself. And one of his big pet peeves was the fact that some of them are very tight-knit communities and they don't necessarily welcome people from the outside. And I say shame on you clubs who do that, because there's no place in ham radio for that. I think everybody should be. I'm fortunate. My experience has been the opposite. I was welcomed within my club the first day. They're very pro Elmering and teaching and enhancing your skills. And it's a shame when you know, when people, because I've heard horror stories of people getting turned off of the hobby altogether because of one negative experience. So kudos to the Aroostook Amateur Radio Association, and I'm going to make sure that I get in touch with them. If not during field day, and when I'm in that area during the summer.
Yeah, they were always one of the most fostering organizations that I could think of, and no radio club that I've come across since really has been as open as they are. It's a little unfortunate that they're sort of tucked away in a desolate, if you will, part of the world where they don't get a lot of interest in ham radio and whatnot, but you know, what interest they do get, they foster with all their hearts, and I really thank them for that, for giving me the opportunity to get where I am and to sort of give back to them, you know, in what little way I can. So K1FS, Kilo 1 Fox Sierra, is the club, k1fs.org if you're interested in that. And Pete, for you, the local repeater is 146.73, minus on the offset and no tone. You can log that now.
I've actually written it down. Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if it's already programmed. I've already programmed my 710 for the eastern part of North America, which is where I'm going to be hanging out. I'm going to be in Brunswick, Maine for a little bit in July, and then we're going up to the Presque Isle area and in the Maritimes in Canada. So I've actually used the ARRL's repeated directory to program my radio, and I wouldn't be surprised if that frequency is already in there. However, I've written it down, and I'm going to double-check and make sure it's in there, because I'm going to make sure that I give them a shout-out. I'm going to be spending about a week in the area on the Canadian side, but I easily can contact Presque Isle from where we are. And it's called Bath, New Brunswick, just outside of Florenceville, where McCain makes its wonderful French fried potatoes.
Yes, I'm very familiar with potatoes. And for those folks who don't live in Aroostook County, Maine, yeah, it's all about the potatoes. Anyway,
they even have a potato museum just north of that. It's on our side. It's on the Canadian side. But on the way to Presque Isle, I can't remember where, because that's where McCain's head office is. They have the McCain's Potato Museum. So if ever you're in the area and you want to come up, you can visit the Potato Museum.
You can also go to the Potato Blossom Festival. I think it's sometime in August up there. Anyway, if you happen to get on the local repeater, look up N1NXU. That's Steve, November 1, November X-ray uniform. I think he'd get a thrill from hearing from you, because he's the only one on the show that I know for sure actually listens to us. So that might be interesting. And I would like to say, and I know he doesn't listen, but Steve does. So when it comes to field day, and I'm going to try and get this episode out before field day happens so Steve can listen to it, make sure that Scotty, and his call sign is Whiskey Alpha 1 Yankee November Zulu, WA1YNZ, make sure that Scotty does not hog the CW channel. Make sure that that rig gets used by somebody other than him during field day, because to me that was the only shortcoming of field day, is if you wanted to do CW work, you had to bully Scotty out of his radio.
That's funny, because we have a Scotty in our club too, and his name is actually Pierre, like myself. I'm Pete. My birth name is Pierre. I'm very francophone. Je suis français de nature. Mais,
hey, stop that. You're hurting my ears.
I'm trying to bring a little culture, a little international flair to Linux in a Ham Shack. But no, we have another Pierre. The reason they call me Pete is because I lived in Alberta for so long, but it served me well in our local club, because there's an old timer whose name is Pierre. So by calling me Pete, they don't get us confused. But the Pierre, his name is his call sign, sorry, is Victor Echo 2 Fox Fox Echo. And he's one of the best guys I've seen on CW, you know, bar none. This guy was in the military. He's in his mid-60s now. He's been doing CW since the womb, pretty much. And he's the same. Once he gets on, you can't get him off. Like, you got to tackle him out of that chair, and it's hilarious. But he gets the contacts, though. So, you know, it's fascinating. It's amazing to see a good CW operator operate. I can watch him for hours. This guy is so good that the one of the local festivals here, they do a tribute to old careers, and they choose him every year to be the CW operator, like you would have seen in a railroad station. So we have our own Scotty. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, take that as a point of operating procedure, Scotty. You know, let someone else do CW for at least a couple minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
So, is there anything else,
Scotty?
Yes, beat me up, Scotty, and don't do it with CW. So, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up our talk on field day?
Oh, I want to mention fellow podcasters, Low SWR, Rich and Brady, are actually going to be operating. They're letting their listeners choose the operating QTH, so where they're going to be operating from, and whether or not you're going to be operating as Richard's call sign or as Brady's call sign. So they're trying to choose between Nebraska and Wyoming. So you can go on their website and vote. I voted for Wyoming just because Wyoming sounds cooler than Nebraska. But really, you know, I'm sure they're both great locations. So if you want to encourage some fellow podcasters, go to their website and help them decide where they're going to have their field name. My God, I'm drawing a blank. Right now, there's, I think, 7-5 in favor of Wyoming as AC0XR. And that was my choice. Also because, you know, I bond with Brady because we both have an X in our call. And as you know now, that's my new criteria for bonding with people.
You don't get out much. No, actually, you get out way more than I do, so I can't say that. All right. Well, I think if that's it, we'll do some music, and then people will not want to miss segment three of this show, because we're going to talk about the Podfather, Adam Curry, and I'm not going to say some very nice things. With that as our little teaser into segment three of the show, what I would like everybody to do is take a notepad and a pen or a pencil and write down how many different genre or style changes you detect in this next song. And I'm pretty sure you won't get them all. But anyway, this is a great song by a woman and a band called Leslie Hunt from an album called Your Hair Is On Fire.
Wait. A woman and a man called Leslie Hunt.
And a band.
Oh.
Band. B-A-N-D.
Sorry, by mistake.
Yeah, and a band. Anyway, the band, if you will, Leslie Hunt, is a song called Open Your Eyes and See If You Can Count All of the Different Style Changes That Happened During the Song. We'll see you in a couple minutes.
I know how crazy it is, thinking it's love when it's the opposite. Confusing defenses for abandonment. Purple skin, you can't convince that you're fine. That you're fine. Strong, come on. Stay on this path, and soon we'll be gone. I've already tried to sit idly by, and then one day I wrote this song.
Okay, Pete, what'd you think of that one?
And we're back. I like that. That was pretty cool. I did not mention to count how many different styles there were, but that was very energetic and upbeat, and yeah, it's cool.
Well, I'm glad you thought so. So anyway, What do we got?
Are you
here?
Looking for forgiveness for usurping all of my choices?
Am I looking for forgiveness? No, not at all. It's my show.
You're at peace then, okay?
That's right. I am at peace.
It's excellent.
That's right. Oh, now it's... See, I got to have that button handy.
Throwing you off there.
Yeah, that's right. I was feeling very zen before I couldn't find that button.
That's all right.
Disappointed!
Get it with practice.
For those people who are wondering why we haven't announced the winner of the Beagle Bone Black yet, it's because we aren't going to do it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's not because we don't have a winner. It's because we will have a winner. But I would like to encourage more people to join our contest. I'm not sure that we actually gave it enough time. We have had entries, so there's no question about that. We've gotten a few entries, and I'm glad about that. But I would like to encourage people to have more entries. So I'm going to put the announcement of the winner off until the next episode to give people more chances to sign up. So we're going to push this out till midnight on July 2nd. You have to give us your answer to why you deserve a Beagle Bum Black on our voicemail line, 1-909-547-7469. Or to become a paid subscriber of the show, which costs you $2 a month. Or $20 a year. Either one gets you entered to win the Beagle Bone Black, and we will, you know, definitely, no more putting it off, announce the winner on episode number 110, which will be recorded live on July 2nd. So make sure to get your entries in, and we will do the announcement then.
Yeah, we're building anticipation and encouraging people to join us.
All right. Yes, that's absolutely true. Oh, God, I caused a loop and spiked my CPU. See, this is why I should not be reading the chat room while I'm doing a live show.
Okay, what does he mean by that?
I don't know, but if you want to ask him, that's fine. But I'd like to talk about Adam Curry.
All right, well, Jay Lindsay, you can type in the text box what you mean by that, and that's okay. Talk about Adam Curry. Go ahead. I actually listened to his podcast, one of his podcasts, the No Agenda podcast, recently. It is very long. It was about 3 hours. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, I am actually very glad to hear you say that you have mixed feelings about Adam Curry's podcast, because I also have mixed feelings about his podcast, but what I really have... is mixed feeling. Well, no, actually, I shouldn't say I have mixed feelings, because I don't have mixed feelings at all. I have some very stable and committed feelings about what he said about our podcast, and he said it specifically. So,
ooh, I did not know that.
Yes. And so without further ado, I would like to play a small snippet from the No Agenda podcast, number 517, at or around 46 minutes in. Wherein Adam Curry, the Podfather, who I talked up on this show quite eloquently a couple episodes ago, said this about us.
So there's all these podcasts, Linux in the Ham Shack, Ham Nation, Ham Radio Today. And let me tell you something, they all suck balls, every single one of them. It's horrible.
Okay, so...
Well, that's pretty to the point.
Yeah. Well, one thing I will say about Adam Curry is he does not mince his words. So I had a little conversation on Twitter with Adam Curry about our show and what he thought was so bad about it, or what he, you know, thought might suck balls about our show. Now, one thing I will bring up about this before I go on is the fact that we are, what was the second one he mentioned there? Hang on.
So there's all these podcasts, Linux in the Ham Shack, Ham Nation.
Yeah, Ham Nation, that was the second one that he mentioned. Now, he's put us in good company, because that is Leo Laporte's podcast about ham radio.
That's a video one, though. It's more of a video cast than a podcast, because if you listen to that show, you miss a lot, because there's a lot of visuals involved. I mean, you can listen to the podcast, but you kind of miss out on some of the show.
Well, that being said, I would like to say that we are in good company in Adam Curry's disfavor by being lumped in with Leo Laporte's Ham Nation and being told that we suck balls. And anyway, I asked him, you know, on Twitter what the problem was, and his assessment was that we spend too much time chit-chatting and don't get to the point, basically, was his major concern.
Oh, like, well, that's what they do for 3 hours.
Well, and see, that's exactly the thing. Now, I will say, he said that He had listened to our show twice. He didn't say which episode specifically, but he listened to two of our episodes. He spent 45 minutes listening to two of our episodes, and in the 45 minutes, or presumably 90 minutes total that he listened, he heard no content related to Linux and the Ham Shack. I have gone through our catalog, and I can't find two episodes. I can't even find one episode where we spent more than 6 or 7 minutes bullshitting and not getting to the point.
We do often not get to the point, at least as far as I'm concerned. I'll gladly admit that. That's part of our charm. I mean, we're not a technical podcast. We're not just going to go throw numbers and version numbers and OS technical specificities. I mean, we kind of chat and discuss and throw our opinions in there. You know, sometimes it's more ham-centric. Sometimes it's more Linux-centric. And that's okay. That being said, we're not going to please everyone, and he's allowed to say that we suck balls. I mean, you know, maybe that's our call to step up our game a bit, and that's not.
No, it's not that. I mean, I'm not going to bring myself down to his level. I mean, he started the genre more or less, and he thinks he's entitled to tell everybody how it is that they're supposed to podcast. But honestly, if you jump from us over to the Linux or over to the No Agenda podcast, yes, when they do their little intro thing, they get down to it, they get right to the point, they talk about their first story, and they talk about stuff for the next 30 minutes, and then they spend 45 minutes jacking each other off. It's ridiculous to me that somebody can say to me, or to you, to the co-hosts of this show, and even to Leo Laporte, who hosts another fine show, that maybe we don't get to the point like right out of the gate, but he spends 45 minutes talking about all the people who spent money and contributed to his show that no one could care less about. It's like, if you want to stay on topic, your show could be about 2 hours shorter, Adam Curry, and I don't necessarily want to stoop to his level and say that his show sucks or anything like that, because I think everybody's show has merit. And the problem that I have with Adam Curry is that he goes off the deep end. He jumps to a conclusion and doesn't have any real rationale for the conclusion that he makes. And he wants to say that his opinion is valid.
Part of that is part of the showmanship. From a Canadian standpoint, Americans tend to be very dramatic and flamboyant when it comes to media. So maybe there's a little bit of that, right? I mean, you tell somebody their show sucks balls, and you know, that kind of gets your listenership's attention, kind of thing. So, you know, I don't think he meant anything. Didn't sound like it was malicious or anything. He's certainly entitled to his opinion. Perhaps he's looking for something more in the lines of, for example, what Solder Smoke was way back in the beginning of Solder Smoke, where it was just the two guys talking, you know, strictly about their ham radio projects. And it was very technical and very, oh, I soldered this wire to that one. And I mean, very, very technical in the beginning of Solder Smoke. So maybe it's just not what he's looking for. And you can't get a feel for a series just by listening to two shows either. So, and besides, it must have been in the Richard years. He obviously hasn't listened since I showed up, or else he'd love us.
That's right. That's exactly the problem. And no, I don't have any animosity towards Adam Curry. I mean, his show is what it is, and our show is what our is. He did later on say that he found a ham radio podcast that he liked, and that podcast was Ham Radio Now, which is also a video podcast. And I've actually been in contact with the creator of Ham Radio Now, and he wants to do a collaboration with us. So that ought to be really interesting.
I'm not familiar with that one. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, so go ahead and check that out. It's hamradionow.tv. And we will apparently be doing a show with him at some point. And I said that I was going to talk him up on a show. I asked him if he had any, like an audio promo or anything like that. And he said he did not. The ham in question is Gary, KN4AQ, Kilo November 4 Alpha Quebec. And look, another Quebec, another call sign that ends in Quebec. So
another soul brother.
That's right. Kindred spirits. He did.
It was meant to be, Russ.
That's true. So I do hope we get to do a collaboration with Gary over on Ham Radio Now. It should be really interesting. And in the meantime, I would just like to play this quote from Adam once more, because the more I hear it, the more hilarious it is to me. So one more time, Adam Curry on Linux in the Ham Shack.
So there's all these podcasts, Linux in the Ham Shack, Ham Nation, Ham Radio Today. And let me tell you something. They all suck balls, every single one of them. It's horrible.
So, Adam Curry, thank you so much, because maybe you've driven people to listen to us, whether you say we suck balls or not, because I happen to think we do a pretty good job over here. We do what we say what we do, and you have a right to state your opinion and to not like us all day long. If nothing else, I got to play a cool soundbite from your show. So
there you go. And any publicity is good publicity, so we'll take it.
Right. That's what they say anyway. I guess we'll find out if that actually holds true, won't we?
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
All right. So where are we going next? Now that I've talked about Adam Curry way too much, we've got some feedback here. So and the first one is actually from Gary KN4AQ. So you want to go ahead and read this one?
Oh, you skipped a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, did I? Oh, look at that. I'm jumping.
Aren't we doing the social media roundup first, or do you want to skip that and go
after? No, let's do that at the end. So go ahead and talk about Gary.
All right. I'll talk about Gary. He's a nice man. I just got to find the spot.
It's in there.
For
trust
a loop
me.
Here. Okay. Gary, KN4AQ of Ham Radio Now TV. We got an email from Gary. It says, hi, Russ. Thanks for pinging me. You're on my list.
We weren't on his list of ham radio related podcasts, which is why I pinged him, and which we are now included on his list of ham radio related podcasts, and thus why he's saying you're on my list. So
excellent. So we weren't. I didn't know about him, and he didn't know about us. So very good.
No, apparently he did know about us. Something. Yeah, he did know about us, and he will say something to that effect as you read.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I was actually already aware of your podcast. Yes, I should have read that line. And I don't know how I missed adding it long ago. But it is here now. I don't have any promo audio prepared. That's on my list. Actually, a YouTube home screen intro. But lots in line ahead of it, I'm afraid. And Ham Radio Now should do a show with you guys sometime, more or less soon. I've still got a ton of stuff from Dayton to edit and get online, but once that's done, I'll check in. 73 from Gary, KN4AQ, Kilo November 4 Alpha, Quebec. Emphasis on the Quebec.
Yes, very well done. So thanks, Gary. Appreciate you putting us on your list. We will make sure to put you on our list very soon. And you can thank Adam Curry for pointing us to you, because he said you have a very fine video podcast about ham radio.
Gary's show doesn't suck balls, does
that's
it?
That's right. Gary's show does not suck balls. You are definitely in Adam Curry's favor. And for that, we applaud you. All right. And we would love to do a collaboration with you, and I hope we can get to that soon.
Absolutely.
All right. So you got an email from Renee, and I did as well. And I thought this came on Google Plus, so I changed it, but it was actually an email. So go ahead and tell us what Renee wants to know.
Yeah, okay. Renee sent us an email this week. I have not answered Renee yet, because I was away for 4 days. I only read the email when I got back on Sunday. So I thought, well, maybe he's listening live so he can hear what we have to say. And if not, I will answer his email in the course of the next few days. But basically, he says, hello, can you please help me? I want to install Linux. Well, you're at the right place, Renee, and good on you. Ubuntu, I have read that they do not take it so closely with privacy. Debian and Fedora would better score on this plane. Which distribution would you recommend where privacy is board certified and is also suitable for ham radio? He says 73, and his call sign is Papa Delta 5 Romeo Sierra, and his name is Renee. Well, thanks for your email, Renee. We appreciate your listenership, and that's a great question. So I put you on top of the list, see what you recommend, unless you want me to go first.
I would recommend Linux Mint, as would you, because I think it's just a very newbie-friendly distribution. I'm not sure how privacy and free software oriented it is. I assume that it's fairly well privacy and free software oriented, not as much as, say, Debian is. Because Debian has a whole separate repository directory for software that doesn't meet the compatibility with GPL. Now, if you're really, really concerned about what you consider free software, there are distributions which are certified, if you will, by the Free Software Foundation.
So is that what he meant by board certified?
And that may exactly be what he meant. And if you give me a second, I will give you the rundown of what the Free Software Foundation considers certified distribution, certified in the GNU Linux vein as supporting free software. First one is BLAG, B-L-A-G, which is based on Fedora. The second is Dragora, D-R-A-G-O-R-A, completely independent distribution, apparently. The third is Dynabolic, D-Y-N-E-B-O-L-I-C. There's also GNUSense, based on Ubuntu. There is Musix, M-U-S-I-X. There is Parabola. There is Trisquel, or Trisquel, depending on how you prefer to pronounce that, T-R-I-S-Q-U-E-L. And there's Ututo, U-T-U-T-O. Apparently, these pass muster with the Free Software Foundation. They're based on various other distributions and, you know, RMS certified to promote freedom. So if you want to try those, go for it. You can find that list at gnu.org/distros/free-distros.html. If you're not quite as worried about the board certifiedness of their free software freedom, I would go with Linux Mint. And I might even try Manjaro, which is the distribution we talked about at the start of this program, because I think both are excellent distributions, easy to install. And while they may not be as focused on freedom as some of the other ones that I just mentioned, they are certainly worth giving a try to. So with that, I will let you hear Pete's assessment of the same question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was unsure what he meant by board certified. I kind of figured it was in the same vein as you mentioned. But yeah, I also, my first recommendation would definitely be Linux Mint 15 Olivia. I have tried both the Cinnamon and the Mate desktop. I prefer Cinnamon. I just find it's just a little, you know, cuter. It's just nicer to look at if you want. If it's your first foray into Linux, it's definitely an easy transition from a Windows or a Mac OS, if that's where you're coming from. I mean, I'm not making any assumptions, but definitely easy to install. It's got a very friendly package manager, so you could find your favorite ham radio programs. Because he also mentioned that he wants a distribution that's ham radio friendly. So definitely Linux Mint doesn't have any pre-installed ham radio programs, but you can definitely get a whole bunch through the repositories through the Synaptic Package Manager, which is what Olivia uses. So you can check them out at linuxmint.com. They have very good tutorials also on the website that you can check out. We also recommended the same version to Phil a few weeks back, who visited you at the booth at Hamvention, Russ. The other ones that I might recommend if you're a little bit more adventurous, well, yes and no. I mean, Hammix 5.0 and HamOS 12.48, HamOS being Richard and Brady from LowSWR, which is Richard who programmed it. But they are also very easy to install. They come as an ISO, live CD, or you can install it. I had no problems installing. I've installed all of these versions in the last 2 weeks. I've gone through five different versions of Linux. Out of the two, I preferred HamOS to Hammix. I just find it has a nicer finish, and it's got a whole bunch of ham radio programs, and it doesn't have too many, but it's got, you know, various programs for logging, for digital modes, you know, FL Digi and company, rig control. It's got things like Zaster, DRAT, so pretty much anything you can do in ham radio, it's already there. It's a small distribution. You know, check them out at all three of them if you want. Download the ISOs, try the live CDs would be my recommendations before you install anything. That's the beauty of Linux. You download the ISO and you play with it for a while and you see if you like it. If you like it, you install it. It takes, you know, 15 to 30 minutes depending on the distribution and your system. And if you don't like it, you put in another CD and you try another live one. And even if you do install it and you don't like it, it only takes a half an hour to wipe it out and restart over. So go ahead and experiment. But definitely Linux Mint, Linux Mint 15 would be my first recommendation. Cinnamon or Mate, depending on how you like the look of your desktop. They're both very functional. I just preferred Cinnamon because of the look. I find it was just a little bit more refined. And maybe check out Hammocks and Ham OS as well. And I'll be sending Renee an email explaining all of these choices and offering more help if he chooses. So if you have any questions, if anybody has any questions, don't hesitate. Have you played with Hammocks or Ham OS at all, Russ? Have you had a chance?
I have looked at them a little bit, but unfortunately they're so much like other distributions that I already use, I haven't really embraced them because I do with Debian sort of everything I ever wanted to do, and I don't need Ham OS or Hammocks to sort of get me in the right direction. But that doesn't mean it doesn't work for other people. It just doesn't work for me. That's the only thing I'm saying by that. Your distributions do not suck balls, okay? I just want to make sure that we're clear on that point.
They're great distributions for someone who just wants something that's basically plug and play. You know, if you don't want to compile your own distribution or write it yourself, those are three really good starting points, I think. And like I said, very easy to use, easy transitions from whatever system you're moving from. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun to check them out. So obviously, Renee is a ham radio operator, so he's probably looking for something that he can just kind of jump in and continue his hobby. So anyhow, that being said, I'll email you shortly, Renee. Probably you'll get the email before this podcast is posted, and that's okay. And we'll go from there.
All right, that sounds good. Well, that pretty much wraps all the feedback up that we have for tonight. But for our social media roundup, we'd like to acknowledge that some folks have signed up to listen to our spiel and our random gibberish over at Google Plus. Those folks are Turhey H, Pierre M, Peter W, and Raymond W. Thanks, guys, for signing up over at our Google Plus community and becoming a part of Linux in the Ham Shack over there at the Evil Empire Google Plus.
Welcome.
Yes, welcome very much. We do appreciate your patronage.
I'm going to have to join that circle, too.
Yeah, you might have to do that someday.
I've joined you guys on Facebook. I'm starting to join the social media ever so slowly.
I don't know. Once you get sucked in, you can never come back.
No. I've never gotten sucked in, but I've been on Twitter and I do a little bit of Facebook. I have my own page if you guys want to check me out. I don't know. I don't go on that often. I'm so often in front of computer screens at work, and then, you know, with the projects I have at home that I don't find I have a whole lot of time for being social on the computer. I like to be social in person. I'm not making a judgment. I just have no time.
Okay, we'll make sure that everyone's aware that you are not making a judgment.
I am not making a judgment. Social media does not suck balls.
We could probably overuse that far too quickly, so maybe we should stop at this point. But anyway, one last announcement that I have before we start the outro is that there was an announcement made that Identica, which is based on status.net, was going to be converting over to pump.io. And that was going to be the new sort of social network of the Identica set. Well, a lot of people don't really, you know, cotton to that transition from Identica to pump.io. So they've started their own status.net instances, which is very easy to do. You can just look up status.net, download the application, basically a web-based app. And if you have a server running somewhere, you can run your own version of status.net, which I have decided to do. So instead of getting all my updates and subscribing to other people's updates via Identica, I now use my own status.net update site, which is u.bluecows.com. That's the letter u.bluecows.com. And if you're interested in subscribing to my updates or you get a subscription from me, it will be from k5tux at u.bluecows.com. And that's so that I will still be able to send and receive status.net updates when Identica decides to disappear. So that's the new address for me. I'm no longer J.R. Woodman at Identica because Identica supposedly is going away.
They're going away. Is Identica a Canadian company? Do you know?
I don't think it's a Canadian company. They just usurped the .ca domain.
I was just curious about that. So.
And if anybody else is interested,
Canadian, I don't care if they disappear.
Right. And if anybody else is interested, my u.bluecows.com is an openstatus.net server. So if you don't already have an Identica account, but you want to have a presence on status.net for all the other people who use it, my status.net server is open and I can give you an account on it. So just email me at k5tux@lhspodcast.info and I'll be happy to set you up with an account.
Very good. I was muted.
Of course you were. Stop muting yourself. God damn it. This show's going to suck balls if you keep muting yourself.
I have to mute myself or else you'll hear me rustle my papers and burp and do all those things that you're not supposed to do on a professional radio show.
Hey,
not to suck balls.
Don't rustle papers. Don't use my name in vain.
There's no vein here.
No, of course, there's no vanity on this show.
Absolutely none whatsoever, because this is the greatest podcast.
This is the greatest Linux and Ham Shack podcast in the universe.
That is correct.
Excellent.
Yes, that's right.
All right.
So I'm going to let you start on the outro, and I'm going to like play some music and stuff. And, oh, what the hell happened to my computer? This happens more often than not. Oh, no, I didn't just lose my recording, did I? If I did, I will be most pissed.
You didn't. You're not using your PC, are you? Windows PC, are you?
No, I'm using a Mac OS actually, and no, I did not lose my recording. So here, let me go ahead and start some outro music.
Max, you're stable. All right, guys. Thanks to everybody for being here tonight. Thanks to all of our monthly donors and yearly subscribers. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks to all of our listeners, live and quasi live. Where's that quasi live? Check out our website, of course, lhspodcast.info. You can reach us at info@lhspodcast.info. That goes to both of us. You can leave us a voicemail. Please do at 1-909-LHS-SHOW, 1-909-547-7469. Subscribe to the mailing list. The link is on the website. And you can also go to Cafe Press and Printfection. Buy some of our show merchandise. Each purchase helps out the show, goes right back into the production. And of course, listen live every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central. The recording schedule can be found on the website. My name is Pete, Victor Echo 2 X-Ray Papa Lima in Montreal, wishing you a great week. Hope to talk to you guys at Field Day. And with that, we'll talk to you soon. Take it away, Russ.
Okay, this is Russ, K5TUX, and for both of us, we want to thank you for tuning in to episode number 109 of Linux in the Ham Shack. Check out the website at lhspodcast.info. It has all the information you ever wanted to know about the show, including how to become a part of it, where to send us voicemail, where to send us email, where to participate in the IRC channel, where to send us, information or say email saying we suck balls or whatever it is you want to tell us. Go to lhspodcast.info. You'll find that information out. This is Russ, K5TUX, broadcasting live from between the peaks in the pine forest of north central Arkansas, and saying goodnight to you from here, and for Pete, who's up in somewhere southeast of Montreal, which is probably not right. We'll catch you all.
Right.
Oh, it's exactly right. Excellent. I guess we'll catch you all in 2 weeks or so. And have a good one until then. Good night.
7-3.
In the Ham Shack, Ham Nation, Ham Radio Today. And let me tell you something, they all suck balls.